Fantastic, the big boomy microphone is on. I'm always a little bit nervous when I do the first talk that it's not going to be turned on, it's going to be silent. So they've given me the really big room for this session. So I'm going to have to, normally I walk around the stage, so I'm going to have to run from side to side. So thanks everyone for getting up early for the first session of the day. I'm Ben Armstrong, Program Manager on the Hyper-V team, and I'm here today to talk about Hyper-V Replica in Windows Server 2012. This is a new feature that we've built into Windows Server for disaster recovery. But before I jump into the presentation that I've been giving in a couple places now, I do want to give you a bit of personal insight for me working on this feature. And I do want to be really clear, I'm being very serious about this, and this is a real life story. So just over a year and a half ago now, it was a very dark and cold winter's day in Seattle, and if any of you have been to Seattle, you know that the winter days are very dark and cold. And I was in my office late one evening, and I was actually working on a presentation to give to the general managers and executive team of Windows Server, where this presentation was basically giving them the summary of, hey, here's the results of our investigations, talking to customers about disaster recovery. Here's the idea. You know, and it was the pitch for Hyper-V Replica and saying, hey, we should be doing this. And this is why we think this is important. And as it was a cold winter's day and I was working on a PowerPoint slide, which is one of my least favorite activities, and I'm a responsible worker, I took a break and I had a look at Facebook, as you do. And what I saw on Facebook was this. That is actually, if you see the middle post, that is actually my father, who runs a business in Brisbane, saying, we've just got the call from Energex saying that they're about to turn our power off because they reckon that in 3 hours, our business is going to be underwater. And they were right. So I have a couple of photos, and throughout the floods, I was following this closely. All my extended family lives here in Brisbane. Thank goodness no one's houses were affected, but my father's business did go entirely underwater. This is not his business. This is the building next door. This is a photo that they took. But this is what his business looked like after the flood. This is the office where they were. This is the insides, and this is actually where they were keeping all their servers. You know, and the worst thing for me is they do actually use Hyper-V for all their servers. So, you know, if we had built this feature 2 years ahead of time, life would have been a lot better for them. But it was really hard for me to be in America while all this was happening, but it was also fascinating for me, given that we were working on developing features to help people in exactly this sort of situation. I have one last photo, and you can see the water went pretty much up to just the bottom of the second story. So, Hyper-V Replica. It's about building a disaster recovery solution. But specifically, and I'm going to talk about this a lot because I get a lot of confusion about this, it's about enabling disaster recovery for small and medium business. So why small and medium business? Well, there's a couple of reasons. First, this is fascinating. This is a survey that was done by Symantec in 2011 where they went out and they surveyed small and medium businesses and they gathered a bunch of information. So for a small medium business, average outages per year. Let's do a show of hands. How many people think it was one? Nope. Three? Six? 25. Wow, you guys are pessimistic. 25. It's actually six. Six is the average. That's the highest number of hands I've seen for 25. You guys must have some horror stories. Yeah, it's going down every other week. And keep in mind, we're not talking about enterprise. We're talking about small, medium business. What's the downtime cost per day for these businesses? 500? I feel like I'm doing an auction. 3,850? A couple of hands. 7,750? 12,500. Very pessimistic audience, but this time you're right. 12,500 is the average cost of downtime, which means for the average small business over the length of a year, they see $75,000 lost through site down. Now, this is a fun one. What percent of small, medium businesses did not have any disaster recovery plan whatsoever? So who's going to say 10%? No one. 15%? Actually, we had one person say 10. 25. 50. You know, you're right. 50%. And just so you know, we have got permission to use this. For the 50%, the disaster recovery plan is this. But the interesting thing is, when we went out and we talked to small and medium business, and as we were working on Hyper-V Replica, we spent a huge amount of time talking to different customers, trying to get an insight into their problems and how to best solve them. What we found when talking to small and medium business was, there are great disaster recovery solutions out there today, but all of them require a significant investment in infrastructure. And it's so much that small and medium businesses just said, look, there is no disaster recovery solution for us. They're all just priced out of our range. And that was really our goal, was let's build something that's accessible and easy to use for this unaddressed market. So I'm going to give you an overview of the basic capabilities of Hyper-V Replica. So there are two deployment models that we focused on thinking small and medium business. The first model that we looked at was, a medium business with a central office and some branch offices, where they're going to want to go, we're going to be replicating our virtual machines from our branch office, from our central office out to our branch office. Because if you talk to most people in medium business, the branch offices are really throwaway. No medium business is like, I lost a server at the branch office. What they care about is the servers at their main headquarters. The second one that we focused on, and this was a really interesting one and a really challenging one, was what about small businesses where they're so small that they don't have two sites? How do you provide disaster recovery there? And we spent a lot of time and what we're hoping and what we're working towards is we want to see local hosters providing Hyper-V Replica as a service where small businesses can have their servers replicate to a local hoster. We've done a lot of work to enable that. Some simple examples are Hyper-V Replica does not require Active Directory. It doesn't require a shared namespace. It doesn't require a shared IP space. We did all of this so that we could have a hoster just provided as a service and not have to have a huge amount of infrastructure in place to make it happen. Another thing that we focused on, though, was making sure that really we didn't want anything to block Replica. We didn't want to have a situation where we said, if you're using this deployment, if you're using this feature, you can't protect that workload with Replica. So we've done a lot of work to make sure, two Hyper-V servers, either in a domain or out of a domain, whether there are clusters involved on either end, whether you're using live migration, storage migration, whether you're using backup, all these features all continue to work. Your virtual machines remain protected by Hyper-V Replica. So now I'm actually going to jump over to the UI, because there's actually a lot to talk about as we're stepping through the UI. And I'm going to show you the process for setting up Hyper-V Replica. As I'm switching across, I will give a little apology and a tip. I am cheating slightly for this demo. I am actually running Hyper-V inside of Hyper-V. It's not officially supported, and it's a bit tricky to set up, but the effect is I can't turn on these virtual machines. But I don't need them to be running in order to show all the features. So I have two Hyper-V servers. They're actually virtual machines on my laptop, Replica 1 and Replica 2. And I've set these up in the same domain just to make my demo easier today. Now, Hyper-V Replica is not an extra feature. It's not something that you have to pay for. It's not even something that you have to, you know, install as an optional role or feature. You install Hyper-V, you have Hyper-V Replica. It is not enabled by default. If you come into Hyper-V settings, we have a Replica page now where you can enable Replica, and you can configure things like where should I store data from virtual machines that are replicating to me. You can also configure, like, hey, what servers am I going to let send me replicated data? I'm doing a demo here, so I'm being lazy and just saying, hey, any server that wants to replicate to me is good. But obviously, if you were doing this as a hoster providing a service, you're going to want to make sure that only people who have paid are sending you virtual machines. So I've got that all set up. And I'm going to go ahead. I have file server 3 here, which I haven't set up for replication. And I can come down here and choose to enable replication. Now, we've spent a lot of time trying to make this process as simple as possible and as safe as possible. And I'm going to talk about a lot of this work as we're going through. So I'm going to select Replica 2. And at this stage, it actually goes off and it does a bunch of checking against Replica 2. If I hadn't enabled Hyper-V Replica on Replica 2, it would have come back right now and said, hey, destination server isn't configured properly. You need to go and fix that. So it says, OK, I can connect to Replica 2. And it gives me a couple of options here. The big one to talk about here is using HTTP or HTTPS. So some things to call out. First, we do send our data over HTTP. And we did that because one of our big planned deployments that we look at is we expect to see people doing Replica over commercial broadband. You know, we're looking at small business. We're expecting, like, people aren't going to get dedicated network infrastructure for this. They have their internet connect. They want to replicate over that. And as we all know, unfortunately, the various ISPs around the world tend to like to block different ports. And we want to make sure, hey, this is going to work no matter what. Now, we do provide the HTTPS. I haven't set that up here, so I only have the Kerberos and HTTP option. There are two reasons why you want to do HTTPS. The first reason is if you're not in a domain, if you're in workgroup or if you're in separate domains, then you need to configure certificates and HTTPS so that we can ensure that no one's impersonating anyone else and the servers are valid. The second reason, however, is if you are going to be doing replication over an unsecured commercial internet connection, then you want to use HTTPS to ensure that the traffic is protected. As I said, I'm using a domain in Kerberos here just because it was easier to set up for me. So OK, we're going to go with HTTP. Now, here's a fun page. And this often causes confusion. Here I can select which virtual hard disks we're going to replicate. And you might be thinking to yourself, why would I do that? You know, I'm replicating a virtual machine. Surely I want to replicate all the virtual hard disks. Well, as I said, I'm going to be mentioning this a lot. We designed this for small, medium business, for commercial broadband. And we spent a lot of time thinking about what can we do to reduce the amount of traffic that we're sending across that network link to make this actually a viable solution for a commercial broadband link. And one of the things that we did, let's be honest, we're talking small, medium business. Chances are a lot of these servers are mostly idle. You know, they're a file and print server for half a dozen people. When we started profiling these sort of workloads, what we saw was that a lot of the I/O traffic was actually Windows writing to the page file. So a best practice that we have is, hey, if you're doing this, set up a second virtual hard disk just for your page file. Put your page file on that virtual hard disk and don't include that in the replica set. Windows is quite intelligent these days. If it comes up on the other side and the page file disk is missing, it will just go, oh, well, I'll create a temporary page file on the system disk, and it'll continue to run. But this way, you avoid sending all that I/O activity from the page file over to the other side. So I'm going to unselect my page file disk and go to the next and possibly the most confusing page in this wizard. I'm going to spend some time talking about this because everyone who sits down and uses this UI and gets to this page comes away with the wrong impression, unfortunately. So let me explain a bit of how Hyper-V Replica works under the covers. Under the covers, what we're doing is as the virtual machine is running, we are basically plugged directly into the IDE and SCSI controller inside the virtual machine. And we are logging new writes as they come to the disk. And every 5 minutes, we take the last 5 minutes of writes and we send that log file over to the destination computer where we replay those writes into VHDs on the destination side. And so we're doing this every 5 minutes. It's asynchronous software replication, which means if you have an unplanned downtime, you may lose 5-10 minutes. We've actually built that logic so that we will, if there is network latency or so on, we will back off up to about 30 minutes. But if we exceed 30 minutes, we actually put it into an error state. And I'll talk more about that later on. Now, one of the key things, though, is as we're doing this asynchronous replication, this is in no way data consistent for the guest operating system and the applications inside. We're just grabbing IOs at random points in time and sending them across. And what that means is if you do have an unplanned failover, if you do have like primary site down and I wasn't able to do any preparation and we're starting on the destination side, the virtual machine is really going to behave like a physical computer where you went up and just yanked the power cord out of the back and put it back in. Now, if I talk to the file server guys who work on NTFS, if I talk to the SQL team, if I talk to the Exchange team, and I step them through this scenario and I say, hey, what's going to happen? They all tell me, well, you know, we've spent a lot of time, power outages happen in real life. We've spent a lot of time designing our file system, designing our applications so that they are resilient to these sorts of failures. And we feel really comfortable with you guys building a solution that just does that. And we believe, hey, you know, worst case scenario, maybe Windows is going to do a check disk to make sure everything's fine. And that's why we use that method. Now, if instead of talking to the developers, I go out and talk to real people, like all you in this room, and I say, yeah, it's kind of like pulling the cord out of a server. I can see people go, really? It's not a pleasant mental image for most of us who've actually worked day to day with servers. So we do provide a couple of options here to give extra levels of safety around your data. So the first option we have is we allow you to configure recovery points. And what this is you say, hey, I want to keep 4, 5, 6 recovery points. We're still doing the replication every 5 minutes, sending the data across, sending the data across. But then on the destination side, once an hour, we just take a virtual machine snapshot. So that if you have an unplanned failover and you're incredibly unlucky and there was some data corruption in the last replication point, you have a couple of alternate options to try. You can say, okay, let's go back an hour earlier and let's see if that point was good. If you're really paranoid, we also allow you to say, you know what, as well as taking those snapshots, you know, every 4 hours, every 6 hours, whatever makes sense to me, also take a VSS-based snapshot of this virtual machine and send it across to the other side. We don't use VSS for our 5-minute interval because it's a very process intensive activity. It causes a lot of I/O churn, it causes a lot of CPU churn. So you would not want us to be taking a VSS snapshot every 5 minutes. But you know, if you're really paranoid and you want to make sure, like, I have all my bases covered, you can come in here and say VSS snapshot. So this is actually, one, the page with the most buttons, but it's actually my favorite page. Because we spent a lot of time talking to users about this, because if you have a small, medium business, you have a couple of light workload servers, replicating the ongoing I/O traffic is actually not that hard. What is hard is getting the first copy of the virtual machine from here to there. Because you know, if you think about it, that's going to be tens, possibly hundreds of gigabyte in size. And we're talking about doing this on commercial broadband. Well, moving 100 gig over commercial broadband is going to take you a month. So that's really not an option. So we've provided a whole range of options for how do we get that first copy over there. So the first thing that we have here is the just send it over the network. And frankly, the only time you're going to use this is if you're testing this in your lab. Here I have two virtual machines side by side, so I will use send it over the network. The second option is send initial copy using external media. I wanted this text to be, put it on my USB drive, I'm getting in the car. Because that's what it is. You know, it's the for the old IT guys, you'll remember the saying of never underestimate the bandwidth of a truck full of tapes. You know, the reality is, for small and medium businesses, we expect that most of the time, the easiest way is going to be, hey, get a USB drive, put a copy of the VM on there, and either jump in your car and drive out to your remote site, or put it in the post. Now, a common question that I get asked about this is, especially when people hear me say, put it in the post, is they say, well, wait a second. Once I choose this option, how long do I have to be able to get it to the other side? You know, are we going to have a fantastic race where it's like, we've got 10 minutes left and we have to get it hooked up? No. The simple story is we let you take as long as you want. However, from the point you say put it on external media to the point that you actually complete the replication, we are now tracking all the changes. And the longer you wait, the bigger the change log we have to send when you get there. So obviously, it's in your best interest to get it there as quick as possible because you're trying to reduce the amount of bandwidth that you're using. But there is no hard-coded limit where we'll say, you timed out. I'll take questions at the end. The final option that we have here is a fun but potentially dangerous option. So we had a number of users where they said to us, hey, we already do off-site backups. Can you let us use that off-site backup to seed the replication? You know, I've already got most of the data over there. And that's what this option does. And what this option does is you say, I want to use a backup of this virtual machine that I've restored on the destination side. We will go through, and we basically have an algorithm and a process where we go through, we check the data, we do block hashing, we figure out what's the same and what's different, and we send the differences. The simple way to think of this is with this option, what we're doing is we're trading off network for CPU. Because this process is a very CPU-intensive process, but it drastically reduces the amount of network traffic that we use. So why did I say that this is a potentially dangerous thing? You do have to be a little careful with this. And the reason why is I like to say we have a great algorithm for going through and resyncing. And let's say I had a file server, and instead of pointing it at a backup of a file server, I pointed at a backup of a completely different SQL server. We would make it match. We would take all the time in the world, but we would eventually make that virtual machine on the destination match the virtual machine on the source. We would blow away the entire virtual machine that was there, and we would make it match. So do be careful. You know, make sure that you're pointing at the right virtual machine. The final thing that we provide, and we provide this with both a network and the backup option, is how many people here like working on the weekend? No one? Okay. How many people here have heard that or have this idea that people like to use their internet connection for things other than disaster recovery? Novel. So what we did hear from a lot of people was, hey, like, I think this is actually going to go over the network, but it's going to take 24 hours, and it's going to saturate the network. Can you make it so that I can say, yeah, send it over the network, but do it on Saturday? And so that's what this option down the bottom here is. I can either say do it immediately, or I can come and say, okay, I'm going to set this all up now, but actually do the replication on Saturday when no one's in the office. So I'm going to say immediately just for the purposes of demo. I've got a nice little summary, and I'm going to hit finish, but we're not actually done, because there are some things that we want to configure now, and this has actually brung up the virtual machine settings on my replica server, and it's brought it up for two reasons. The first one is, and I did this on purpose, I've made the virtual switch names not match on both sides, and it's saying, hey, what virtual switch should I be using on the replica side? The second one is we have a feature here called the failover TCP IP address. And what this is if you're thinking about a small business going to a hoster, or even if you're thinking about a medium business who doesn't have a shared IP address space across their main office and their branch offices, when they fail over, that virtual machine is going to need to have a different IP address. And we allow you to configure that now. As you're enabling replication, you can go in and say, okay, here's the IP address to use when we fail over. Now, why is this important? Well, the reason why this is important is because right now, when you're enabling replication, it's a Friday afternoon, the sun's shining, birds are singing, life is good. When you need to fail over this virtual machine, that will not be the case. You'll be panicked, it'll be an emergency, and I hate to be morbid, but it may not be you failing over the virtual machine. It may be someone else. And that is not the time that you want to have to be going through when configuring IP addresses. You know, you want to get this locked in, and you want a failover event to be as simple and brain dead as possible. So I'm not going to set this up because you don't want to watch me type in IP addresses, but you can go in and set up all the details here, and then you complete the replication. So that's the process for setting up Hyper-V Replica. Before I jump into some of the architecture, I'm actually going to have another Ben come up. The naming is just a coincidence. So do you want to introduce yourself?
Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, it is on.
Great, guys. I'm Ben Parker. I'm a consultant with Codify. And for the TechEd this year, we're delivering technical services. And it came up that Ben was presenting this session, and we had an opportunity to come up on stage here. And really, I guess, giving you some background, my responsibility here at the event is to deliver the private cloud, and that's all the infrastructure behind the event. So there's 60 odd virtual machines that are running. They provide services like AD, DHCP and DNS. Now yesterday, unfortunately, we had a failure. We lost power to one of our servers, and some of those core services went offline. We were using Hyper-V replicas onto a separate set of infrastructure in a different room, and we were able to fail over within seconds for what would have otherwise been repowering on an enterprise blade, which I'm sure everyone knows here takes more than a couple of seconds. So that was a success that we've used here with Hyper-V replicas to get the event up and running as quick as we can for you guys, so there was no issue.
And I believe the total downtime you saw was 4 minutes.
It was, and largely that was because I had to briskly walk from metering room 4 back of house to identify the issue and start the failover sequence. But failing over the individual machines was literally 10 to 15 seconds per one. So we didn't have to fail over them all, but we did have to fail over a number. So.
Yep.
And in years gone past, you know, Hyper-V 2012, you know, gave us that flexibility. In the past years, we would have been recovering, as you said, from backups, and that would have been at a minimum half hour with two people using the same keyboard. So we're very grateful for the feature, and it's proven its weight in gold already.
So yeah, this happened yesterday afternoon. I got a note from Ben and team saying, hey, we should come and say that it does work and it is working on site. So all of you were able to continue accessing the resources here thanks to Hyper-V Replica. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
So now let's talk about some of the lower level architecture. And I think I just hit the wrong button on this. Yeah. So I've already talked you through this, that we perform the logging and we send the log files across to the destination side and we replay them into the virtual hard drives on the destination side. But beyond this basic logging, we've done a lot of work to try and make this as resilient as possible. We've heard, and you'll hear me use this phrase a number of times in the rest of this session, we spent a lot of time talking to customers who were using various disaster recovery stories, and we heard a lot of horror stories. You know, and we've really taken those to heart, and we've tried to make sure that as much as possible we avoid those with Hyper-V Replica. So we've tried to make it as resilient to failure as possible. You know, as I mentioned, we will fall up to 30 minutes behind. We automatically try and resync and resume. One horror story that we have heard repeatedly, though, is you can't, when it comes to disaster recovery, you can be too resilient and you can try too hard. And what I mean by this is what you don't want is you don't want a disaster recovery solution where things have been going south for the last 24 hours and it's still just quietly plugging away trying to get things working again. So we spent a bunch of time talking, and one of the decisions that we made was, you know, we're going to draw some very clear lines and go, you know, if things get to this stage, we're not going to keep on trying. We're going to flag this as a high-level error and make it really clear to the admin, hey, something's gone wrong, and you need to come in here and be aware of this. So as I mentioned, if we fall more than 30 minutes behind, we flag that as an error. We don't quietly continue trying. We're like, hey, something's wrong. Now, it's very easy for an admin to come in at that stage and say, like, okay, resync and restart. But we really hope that that admin is actually going to try and figure out, hey, why did this happen? You know, because something outside of our control is happening there. The other thing that we've done a lot of work on is making sure that Hyper-V Replica works with all our various features. You know, there's no point in saying, you know, we can completely protect your workload if you don't use feature X, Y, and Z. You know, that's silly. So one of the things that we spent a lot of time working on is making sure that Hyper-V Replica works well with clustering. So let's imagine I had our replicated virtual machine in a cluster. Obviously, if one of my nodes in the cluster fails, what I don't want is that virtual machine to then fail over to my replica site. What I don't want is for clustering to move that virtual machine and for us to lose track of it. No, I want it to still be protected, and I want it to only fail over to a replica site when I tell it to. And this is actually something that I do need to call out, is Once again, we're targeting small and medium business, commercial broadband. One of the decisions that we made is Hyper-V replica failover is always a manual admin-initiated event. The reason for that is, think about it, if you're a small business, you're replicating over commercial broadband, and you have a one-hour power outage, it would be worse for you if we automatically failed over your workload to the hoster, and you then had to do the failover back when your power came back, so on. Most likely, if it's a one-hour power outage, you're going to go, you know what, we're just going to ride it out. The power's gone. I've called Energex. They've said the power's coming back in half an hour. We're just going to ride it out. So we don't do any automated failover. That's always a manual initiated event. So another thing that we looked at, and you'll understand why this is important a bit later on, is what about if I'm replicating to a cluster? What if I have a failure event there? Once again, we want to make sure that all of these different virtual machine mobilities, failure events, so on, don't result in you not being protected. So what we've actually built is we've built a component that's called the Hyper-V Replica Broker. And this is something that you enable on a cluster. And once you've enabled this, as you're enabling replication, rather than saying replicate to this server, you say replicate to this broker. And it then becomes responsible for making sure that a virtual machine is tracked as it's moving around inside a cluster. So now I want to talk about testing and verification of replication. This is a big thing that we looked at. It's like, okay, so I set up replica, and one day I'm going to have to use it, but how do I guarantee that it's working today? I'm sure we've all heard the horror stories of people with, nightly offsite backups, but they never tested the backup media, and years down the track, they had a problem, and they discover that, the backups have been failing for the last 6 months. Or I've actually heard cases where people didn't even have the right software or processes to be able to restore any backup, so they were wasting their time. We've spent a lot of time making sure that it is easy to come in on a Monday morning and do some quick sanity checks and know that everything is functioning. So I'm actually going to skip over, I'm getting ahead of my deck, I just realized. I shouldn't be talking about testing yet. That's later on. I apologize. What I'm going to talk about now is actually planned failover. So we have two concepts. We have planned failover and unplanned failover. Unplanned failover is, when the site went down and you're going to go to your secondary site and going to say, okay, start up these virtual machines. An unplanned failover is actually what Ben Parker experienced with the infrastructure here. But in talking to users, what we've actually found is that the more common scenario is actually a planned failover. If you think about the picture I had from Facebook from my father, he had a small window of notice. Not lots, but he had a small window of notice. And we wanted to build Hyper-V replica so that when you have that small window of notice, you can get in there, and rather than having an unplanned failover where you're going to lose 4 or 5 minutes of data, hey, we have some time. Let's make sure we get that last bit of data over there, and we don't lose anything. So I'm going to step you through a planned failover and what that looks like. So I have file server 1 here, and file server 1 is currently enabled for replication going to my replica 2 server. I can come in here, and you can imagine that I've set this up with the IP address, I've set it all up, and I now have, half an hour to fail over my virtual machines. So I can come in here, say replication, planned failover. I'm going to uncheck the option to say start the virtual machine, because since I'm running Hyper-V and Hyper-V, that would fail. But this is just a single click. I say failover. We go, we check that the virtual machine is configured correctly. We send all outstanding data. We reverse the replication relationship. This is interesting and important. What we actually do is we make it so that now the copy on replica 2 is my primary copy, and we're sending the replicas to the old primary copy. Why do we do that? Well, once again, talking to customers, looking at data, what we found is that in a lot of situations, site down is often not permanent. Site down may be for a couple of weeks, but you're going to be working hard to get that site back up. And when you get that site back up, you want to get those workloads back there. And by reversing the replication relationship before the site goes down, it makes it very easy to get the site back up. Because when the site comes back up, I'm going to come here to replica 2. It's going to say, hey, I have a replication relationship, but it's in a failed state. I'm able to then just go, can you please resync? It goes through and it'll do the resync, and once it's resynced, I can go, okay, can we do a planned failover back? And it just makes it a very simple process for us to configure. So that's a planned failover. Jump back to my presentation. And now I'm going to talk about test failovers. I apologize that I got that slightly out of order. But this is a big deal, is being able to understand the health of your disaster recovery solution on a day-to-day basis. And we've built in a couple of tools to allow you to do this. One is test failover, but another is our health model, our health monitoring. And I'm going to show both of these to you. So I'll jump back to my server, and this time I'm going to use File Server 2. This is another virtual machine that I have replicating. And the first thing I want to show you is the detailed health report. So I can come here, select Replication, View Replication Health. And we bring up a bunch of information, and I always get asked this. This is actually information that we're storing in the event log. We're presenting it prettily here, but you can hook this up through various management tools. But there are some key things that we show here. The first obvious one is the big green check mark. And we have a couple of different health states that we'll show you. Actually, often when I do this, it's in a warning state, so I'm happy to see that it's in a green state today. The next thing that we show you, though, is we show you a bunch of statistics about recent replication cycles. And we show you these statistics for a very important reason. And this is actually, once again, this is a horror story that we heard a number of times talking to people using disaster recovery solutions today. And the story that we heard was, you know, people doing things right, people doing things by the book. They had disaster recovery, they had processes, they had procedures, they checked on the status of their recovery. And yet they still got burned. How did that happen? Well, what was happening in these cases was they had policy and procedure that said, hey, every day, you know, the IT admin who's responsible for our disaster recovery solution needs to go in and check to make sure that everything's okay. Now, if you're an IT admin and you have a task that you have to do every day, let's do a show of hands. Who would do this in the afternoon? Who would do this just before lunch? Who would do this with their first cup of coffee of the day? Yeah. You got a task you do every day. You come in, you get your cup of coffee, it's like, okay, you know, I got to check this. And what we actually heard was we heard that what would happen is when people were right on the boundary of not having enough network bandwidth for their replication set, that what they would actually see is during the day, while people were in the office and also using the network, their replication would fall hours behind. And then overnight, it would catch up. And so what would happen is they would come in, 9 a.m. every morning, cup of coffee. Oh, look, everything's green. No, we're within 2 minutes. But then, after months of doing this, they would have a failure in the afternoon and discover that they'd lost 2 hours of data. And so that's something that we went, okay, what are we going to do about that? So we provide you a bunch of statistics. And one of the things I mentioned, the reasons for warning states, if we have, even if things are fine right now, even if when I bring up this report, things are perfect right now, but if sometime in the last 24 hours we've fallen more than 30 minutes behind, we put this into a warning state to say, hey, something's going on. You know, you need to be looking into this system and figuring out what's happening. But we also provide you the information like, you know, what's the average size of a replication log we've sent? What's the maximum size? So you can know, is there spiky traffic happening? We let you know how long it's been taking on average for us to send the data. Now, I'll tell you, you want your average latency to be under 5 minutes. If it's under 5 minutes, life is good. If your average latency is between 5 and 15 minutes, we're still working, but that should be a red flag to you. Because what that says is it says you are getting really close to running out of bandwidth and being in an unprotected state. So we provide all this information. We actually also allow you to dump this out to a CSV file if you need to show it to someone else. So that's the first thing we have. The second thing we have, though, is the test failover. So I have file server 2 here. It's replicating over to replica 2. I can come here, and I can say, I want to do a test failover. I can choose which recovery point I want to use for the test failover. And what it's actually going to do is it's going to create a lightweight clone of this virtual machine that I can power up. And I can check, hey, is everything working fine? Now, a couple of things to point out. First thing, and this is critical, even while I'm doing this test failover, replication is still ongoing. My virtual machine is still being protected. So if you were the world's unluckiest man, and you had your primary site fail while you were testing your replication, don't worry, you're still covered. Second thing to talk about is whenever I say, okay, you can do this test failover and you can power on the virtual machine and you can make sure that everything's safe, I know that a bunch of you are going like, you can't do that because then you would have two copies of the virtual machine on the network at the same time. Well, you don't. Because if I go into this test virtual machine and I go, you're going to say, hey, it's actually connected to my test switch. And what we do is, by default, if you do a test failover, we'll actually just disconnect the network adapter on the virtual machine. So by default, it'll come up disconnected, and you can test it, and there's no problem on the network. We understand that often you're failing over a set of virtual machines, and you need to have all of them running in order to make sure that things are actually working. And that's where we allow you to configure a test failover network. So in that scenario, we say, create a private network that's not connected to the internet. Use that so that you can do your tests, make sure that replication is working, make sure that it's protecting your workload. When I'm done with the test, I can come in here and just say, stop test failover. We clean up everything, and replication continues to run. Key thing, I'm protected the whole time through that. So now let's get down into some of the real nuts and bolts. These are some of the common questions that I get asked. The obvious first question is, how much network does this need? And that's, for obvious reasons, it's a really hard question to answer. You know, because the real answer is, it is entirely dependent on the I/O being generated by the virtual machine. Now, in our testing, I want to skip forward to and back one. In our testing, what we actually found, we tested a bunch of different workloads, which we thought were representative of what a small, medium business would want to be protecting. And what we basically found was that about half a megabit per workload that you're protecting. You know, so that's a good place to start, is as you're planning about this and thinking about this, think about, okay, I'm going to be protecting three virtual machines, half a megabit. Let's make sure we've got 1.5 megabit coming out of this site to protect it. As I said, please view that as a starting point. Don't think that that's definitive. Ben said half a megabit, so we're going to put half a megabit. I'm never going to check the health again. No. Please do go make sure and check and make sure that that's appropriate. This is just our testing. The other common question that we get after we talk about, you know, how much network it's going to use is, okay, this is a small business. We have a single connection coming in here. How do I make sure that people can still use the net during the day? You know, I don't want Hyper-V Replica to use all my traffic. So thankfully, Windows Server 2012 has some great network QoS and throttling built into the product. And here are two simple commands that you can use to go in and say, hey, okay, Hyper-V Replica traffic coming out of this box, you know, let's restrict it. You know, let's make sure that it's not using the whole connection. And this is just using the built-in QoS support that's new to Windows Server 2012. So after we've talked about networking, next question that comes up is, what about backup? And there are some important things to understand about backup. The first question that we get, quite common actually, is, well, if I'm using Replica to send all this data over, I also want to do offsite backups. Can I back up from the Replica side so I'm not sending that data twice? You absolutely can. That's something that we've worked to enable. You can back up from the primary site. So if you want to keep on doing backups on the primary, that still continues to work. You can back up from the Replica site. That also works. The key thing to be aware of is regardless of where you're doing your backups, if you ever restore a backup, that is going to put the replication relationship into a failed state, because we go, hey, big change happened, and you need to go in and you need to say, okay, let's resync this, and we'll go through and do our algorithm where we check for changes and figure out what's different. But that all works. The final common question that I get is, okay, what's the storage impact on this? Or what's the impact on the server as a whole? And the impact on the server as a whole really is the storage impact. As you can see here, the memory and CPU impact is frankly trivial. You know, approximately 50 meg of memory for VHD that we're replicating, and usually under 3% CPU. The big impact comes from the storage. And interestingly enough, and this catches a lot of people by surprise, there is storage impact both on the primary and on the Replica server. A lot of people don't account for the impact on the Replica server, because they see the Replica VM and they just think it's an offline VM. You know, offline VMs are free. It's an offline VM, but it has the same I/O going to it as an online VM. So that's something that you need to be aware of, because we're logging this data, we're replaying it on the destination. The recovery site is going to be experiencing exactly the same I/O as the source site. Now, on the source site, what we're doing, because we are logging writes that go to the disk, the net effect is that we basically double the number of writes. Because every time you write to the disk, we're going to write to the log file. And the challenge here is, and I mean, I've spent a lot of time arguing with the devs about this, and we don't have a great answer here, unfortunately. The challenge here is, let's have a show of hands. Who here has had a Hyper-V server where they pushed the disk too far and they went over the disk's bandwidth capacity? So you guys know that's like hitting a wall. You know, once you push your IOPS too far, like performance just goes off. Now, I think this is actually a challenge for the industry today, as unfortunately, I would posit that there are very few people here who could tell me how close they are to that wall. I know I can't with my servers. You know, I've scoped the storage and things are working fine right now. But if you came to me and said, "Hey Ben, can you handle double the IOPS on that infrastructure?" I don't know. You know, I might be using 20%, in which case doubling the IOPS, I'm not even going to notice. I may be using 80%, in which case doubling the IOPS would cause huge performance issues. And unfortunately, this is something that is really hard to know ahead of time. And so the summary of this page is, if you enable replica and later on you're seeing really bad performance on your Hyper-V server and you're trying to figure out what's going on, this is something to think about. Be aware that a virtual machine with replica enabled is generating the IOPS of two virtual machines. The final server impact to point out is that there are some space considerations. We're logging, so that does need extra space. The amount of space it needs, once again, is going to depend on how much I/O is coming into the server itself. On the recovery side, if you configure the recovery points, taking snapshots, that's more space that's being used. Now, the good thing here is that we have been very careful in the design of replica. If we run out of space at any point in time, that is a non-catastrophic event. Because we're doing the log files, if we run out of space, we're able to just throw away the log file and say, hey, you need to clear up some space and you need to resync this replication relationship. But these are all things to be thinking about. So your number one thing to be thinking about with sizing replica, network bandwidth. Start with 0.5 megabit per virtual machine, and then monitor the workload and tailor it to what works for you. Second thing to be thinking about is storage IOPS. Now, watch out to make sure that the system doesn't slow down from storage when you see it. And if you do see slowdowns, start thinking about, okay, can I move these virtual machines to separate disks? Can I get more spindles in there? Can I bring more IOPS into the system? The third thing is space. You know, just, this is basic. You know, keep an eye on space. Make sure that you're not getting close to the wall as we're running along. Those are really your top three deployment considerations. So with that, I would like to bring up this slide, and I'd like to open up for some questions. I know we had one earlier here. That's a good question, and I've actually got been asked that before, and I have some shirts to give out, and that's a great question, so I'm going to throw you a shirt. I get a different colored shirt each time, so it's blue this time. So the question was, hey, what if I'm doing the send my initial copy via post, and my postman works for the KGB? And he steals it and he takes it away. This is actually something that we looked at, and luckily, and I love it when this happens working at Microsoft, I love it when other teams solve my problems. So one of the features that's now enabled in Windows Server is BitLocker to go, where you can enable BitLocker on a removable device. And that's what we would recommend if you're, you know, sending it through the post or whatever. Just, you know, encrypt the device using BitLocker. You know, send the key for decryption in email or whatever in some other method to make sure they arrive safely on the other side. Do you have any recommendations on how to configure DNS? Another good question. I'll definitely give you a shirt for that one. So the question was, what's the story with DNS? So the first thing to be aware of is, we do not do any specific magic with DNS when it comes to replica and failing over. Now, I'll be completely honest with you guys. When I'm doing this demo with live VMs, I entirely cheat in that what I do is I put hard-coded host files on all my virtual machines so that I can do the failover and be like, and look, it works! Yay! So we don't do anything with DNS, and that kind of came around from two main streams of thought on our behalf. The first thing is we had to look into this, and with most DNS setups out there, the worst case scenario is you're going to be waiting 15 minutes for DNS caches and whatnot to resolve. And pretty much everyone we talked to was like, hey, if you know my primary office went under and it took you 15 minutes to get the workload up and running, I'm pretty darn happy. The second thing is DNS is one of those things that you don't want us messing with your DNS infrastructure. You know, it's something that people customize a lot, and we toyed around with a bunch of options, and pretty much every option we could go like, yeah, but if someone set this option or if they have their DNS set up like this, then that's going to cause problems. It is something to be aware of. If the 15-minute window is a concern for you, you can definitely do things like tweak your time to live in your DNS, tweak DNS client cache timeout. That's actually where the 15-minute comes from, as most DNS clients have a 15-minute cache before they'll go and look at other results. Question over there. So the question is, are there any performance counters for replication? Yes, there are millions. Honestly, we log and we have counters on everything that we could think of. So all the with the little health report that I just showed, that's actually all being pulled from our performance counters and from our event logs. So definitely you can go in and do them. We've designed it to be easy to monitor for external groups. Do you want to come and grab a shirt? So the question is, if I do the virtual machine to an external media, what's the process for getting it up and running on a destination side? Good question. I didn't demo that today. It's basically a two-step process. The first one is you're going to take the virtual machine to the destination side, and you import it, just like a standard virtual machine. You say, import this virtual machine, and choose how you're going to import it. Once the virtual machine is there on the destination side, you go back to your primary site, and there's now an option to say complete replication. And that will go through and do the final steps. I'm going to ask this guy.
Just on the testing, we have a requirement to have our users actually access the test environment. Can that be configured to have workstations connected?
So the question is, we have our requirement to have users test our environments. Can that be configured? That's a great question. And honestly, I don't know. What I'm going to say, and I'll be very careful about saying this, is I know Hyper-V very well. And in theory, absolutely. You know, like I can go, just thinking it through, I'm like, yeah, you can configure virtual machines so that users can only access specific virtual machines. We have a whole bunch of authorization and so on. And, you know, honestly, if I were doing this, what I would be looking at is I would be looking at using SCVMM and setting up those users with limited access to that, just that virtual machine. That said, I do want to be crystal clear. No one's tried that. So there may be problems. So the question is, if you're using another backup tool that uses VSS and you're using VSS for Hyper-V replica, how are you going to handle VSS conflicts? Without going into the great gory details, we've actually done a lot of work in the Hyper-V VSS provider to make that work. Because it's actually a scenario that we've heard, even outside of replica, is, and this is kind of strange until you dig into the details, is we're hearing lots of reports of people using multiple backup programs. And what we're actually seeing And this is a great, and I'm sure no one here has ever worked in or works in an environment where maybe not all the IT people talk to each other. That never happens. But what we've actually seen a lot of, and this is outside of Replica, is you'll have a guy who's responsible for backup as a whole for the organization. He's gone out and has got DPM or Backup Exec or some other backup tool, and has got all the servers being backed up and so on. And then you've got some frontline admin who has no idea that this is going on, and he decides to come in and use Windows Backup to take, you know, a manual backup of his server. We actually saw some problems with that in the past. We've done a lot of work to make sure all these different interleaved VSS people work together properly. So it shouldn't be a problem.
You mentioned separate network settings. Can you have separate memory and CPU settings?
So the question is, I mentioned separate network settings. Can you have separate CPU and network settings? I'll give you a shirt for that question. That's a good question because it does raise a design decision that we made that catches a couple of people up. When you enable replication, we copy the virtual machine across, we replicate the virtual hard drives, but after that initial replication, we do not do any ongoing replication of virtual machine settings changes. So yes, you can pretty much change anything to match the destination size. You know, if you need to make tweaks and changes, you can go and size it. Now, the gotcha there is that if you set up Replica and you then make a configuration change on the source side, like for instance, you added a new network adapter or you added a new VHD, you then need to go through and reset up Replica to make sure that that change is sent across. So first, I'm going to apologize. I am out of shirts. It's a good question, but I'm out of shirts. So the question is, I've been talking about just doing failover one at a time. What about large scale? You know, what if I have lots of virtual machines to fail across? This is kind of a hard question for me to answer because, short answer, we haven't announced what we're doing there. Slightly longer answer. SCVMM 2012 Server Spec 1 is going to be coming out with support for Server 2012. You can imagine that they're going to be doing something for Replica. I can neither confirm nor deny what's coming in that release in the final thing. Let me think of another way to say this. We would be morons to not do something. Now, we may be morons, but I'm just saying, we would be morons to not do something. So is backup to Azure fully supported with Replica? So let me be really crystal clear here. You can't Replica to Azure. Replica is just Hyper-V to Hyper-V. But if you're using Replica to protect a workload, you can use any backup solution you want, including backup to Azure. That is a great question. Is recovery of Active Directory supported from a Replica? Yes, but I do want to take a moment to say, for you to ask that question, you're very familiar with the fact that in Windows Server 2008 R2, we had guidance where we said, yeah, you can run Active Directory in a virtual machine, but here's the 20 pages of things you're not allowed to do. And we didn't allow you to use snapshots, we didn't allow a whole bunch of things. In Server 2012, we've done a lot of work with the Active Directory team, and now, you put Active Directory in a virtual machine, everything's supported. You can take VM snapshots, you can live migrate, quick migrate, storage migrate, you can back up and restore at a VM level, you can use Replica. We've made all of that work with Active Directory with no risk of USN corruption. So thank you. So yeah, that's really great. So I'm going to take this as the last question. I'm getting the sign saying to get off the stage.
The other question is shadow copies. If you use shadow copies to use for previous versions.
Yep.
When does the shadow copy information replicate across?
Yes. So if you're using, actually the question is if I'm using shadow copies, and let's be clear, if you're anything that you do inside the guest operating system gets replicated. And I should highlight the replication, because we're doing it at the IO level, it's guest operating system agnostic, so it can be Linux, it can be whatever, but anything that's running inside the guest operating system gets replicated. So that is covered. So thank you all for your time. Please do take time to fill out the evaluation forms. And I hope you're having fun at the show.